present this work. So this is some results. I'm going to present some results obtained by Rémi Lefebvre, who's my current PhD student, Krysia Desawatsky, who's my former postdoc, and myself on a project which is, so this is a theoretical and a numerical simulation project funded by the Levelium Trust, which is about the what is called the quantum thermalization process. And so here, you will see that we will focus on in systems of interacting spinless fermions. So first, this is the plan of my talk. So I'm going to spend some time motivating this, so actually explaining first this quantum thermalization problem and motivating by why I think it's interesting. Then I will describe a phenomenon which is called typicality and which appears when one introduces some randomness in the modeling of physical systems. And here in our case, we are using random matrices to model interactions between particles. Then I will discuss about the crossover from the perturbative regime towards the thermalization regime, the out of equilibrium regime, and finally I will spend some time on describing the stationary states at long times. So let me first, what are the motivations for this topic of research? So the first motivation is on the theoretical side, and it's really about the foundations of statistical physics. So we are all familiar with the fact that in a thermodynamical system, like a gas of particles, for instance, macroscopic sensors, for instance, for temperature or pressure, they provide, they are slow and spatially coarse compared to the microscopic scales. And because of this, they provide measurements which are averaged over the system constituents motion. So in order to build some predictions for these measurement outcomes, the framework of statistical physics assumes a probabilistic hypothesis, which is embedded in the what is called a microcanonical ensemble. And this is really the cornerstone of statistical physics. So in a very crude picture, if you have, let's say, a quantum system with a certain density of states as a function of energy, if you say, for instance, this system can be in a given state of energy at some point, and after some equilibration or some thermalization, this microcanonical ensemble assumes that there is a probability of transfer from this initial state towards the final states, and this probability is just constant over a certain energy window, which defines the so-called accessible states. Okay, these are the states which are compatible with microscopic constraints. So here, I took only the energy, which is defined up to a certain accuracy. And so all these final states are equiprobable. So this is typical of a Bayesian approach to this problem. And you might not be fully satisfied about this hypothesis and question it, but it works so well in practice that actually it hasn't been questioned much over the years, except with the notable exception of Voynum in the end of the 20s. And it's only very recently that one can ask actually if this, instead of making this assumption of equiprobability, maybe one could try to actually calculate this probability of transfer from quantum theory. And by this, I mean I take a closed quantum system. I prepare it initially in a pure state. I let it evolve according to the Schrödinger equation. And I'm wondering if there are any way to see some signatures of equilibration despite the system is closed. It's a closed quantum system. And is there a way to calculate this kind of quantity as this transfer probability? So this is really the first fundamental question. Is it possible to explain the macro-canonical distribution with this strict quantum point of view? Now, the second motivation is on the experimental side, and it's connected to the recent progress in quantum engineering that we are all are familiar with. So, but as you know, in systems like trapped ions or cold atoms in optical lattices, it's actually now it's possible to engineer a quantum system which is sufficiently well isolated from its environment that one can enforce the textbook quantum mechanics unitary evolution on this system over a sufficient or relatively long duration. And in particular, in experiments displaying what is called the many-body localization phenomenon. So here, I apologize in advance. This is probably an oversimplified picture of this phenomenon. This is my understanding. So in such experiments, what experimentalists can do is actually, so they have this optical lattice where they can initially prepare a wave of density of cold atoms by populating preferentially some sites of a given parity. Okay, and at some time they quench the Hamiltonian by lowering the potential height, so and they allow the atoms to tunnel towards neighboring sites. And they monitor here the imbalance between the different parity sites, which is basically a measure of the strength of the wave of density in the lattice. And they monitor it as a function of time. And here, so in this case, where there is no disorder in the lattice, they can see a complete washed-out. So the wave is completely washed out. So this is a signature of equilibration. But as soon as there is some disorder in the potential, that the wave of density can remain. And this is, so there is partial equilibration. And what is really interesting is that these stationary states are clearly unconventional. So they can't be predicted by the standard framework of statistical physics. And so I think these kind of experiments, they are really asking the fundamental question, what kind of statistical description is relevant for isolated many-body quantum systems? So in order to try to answer these questions, so we have studied a random matrix model for systems of interacting spinless fermions. So here you can see this is the single body spectrum for our system. Yeah, so we have 16 states. So you can think of these energy levels like atomic orbitals or nuclear orbitals. The hypothesis that we are making is that actually we can choose arbitrarily the initial state for this system. And the first crucial hypothesis is to have a very large Hilbert space dimension. So this, so the antisymmetric Fock space dimension is this binomial coefficient. It has to be very large. And the aim of the model is to calculate with the maximum level of generality expectation values of occupation numbers in these orbitals.
Sorry, can I ask one more question? What is a spinless fermion?
Sorry?
What is a spinless fermion?
But it's just basically you just enforce you have single body states and you just enforce the Pauli exclusion principle. You can only put one particle in these levels. Sorry?
It's a polarized fermion.
Yes, exactly. You could think of it.
So it's a polarized Fermi gas. So.
Yeah, you can think of it also this way. So then we use this idea of Wigner and Eisen to model, actually to use random matrices. And here we are considering random interactions between these fermions. And in particular, we use the Gaussian orthogonal ensemble. So by doing this, we are deliberately introducing some randomness in the problem. And then, if we look actually at these expectation values, if we consider them as a function of all the matrix entries of the interaction, so we keep the time and all other parameters constant, we just focus on this dependence of these expectation values on these matrix entries, we can see that we have, by hypothesis, we have a high dimension input space. It's possible by studying the gradient of F to show that the dependence of F on all these parameters is actually balanced. There is no outlier on which F depends. And the output of the function, so it's a scalar, so it has a dimension much smaller than the input. And so here we have all the ingredients for this function to exhibit what is called the concentration of measure phenomenon, which tells that actually these quantities are going to be self-averaging. So they are going to be very close for a given realization of the disorder on W. The quantity is very close to its average. And you can think of this phenomenon like a sort of generalization of the central limit theorem. Okay? The central limit theorem, this is for a function which is linear in the random variables. Okay? Like if you have an experiment and you repeat your measurements to calculate an empirical average of your measurement outcome, and you know that the signal-over-noise ratio is going to improve because of this empirical average, okay? And this is just the central limit theorem at play. So here, we have a generalization of this phenomenon, but for nonlinear functions, which is like these observables considered as functions of the interaction. And so I think this phenomenon is really interesting because so it tells you that there is a typical dynamics. So first, it gives some insight on the thermalization process, so the fact that it doesn't depend on microscopic details. Then it's an interesting analytical tool because it tells you that actually you can average over the disorder to make analytical calculations. And finally, numerically, it's also interesting because you get the typical dynamics in a single simulation run. So, but let's see it in action with a numerical simulation. So here we start with this. So this is the single body spectrum here with two fermions. So we have chosen here the single body spectrum. We also generate it from a Gaussian distribution because it allows to calculate now the many body spectrum without interactions. This is the two-body spectrum here, which is a bit, sorry, it's a bit faint. But this, so all these lines are levels, the many-body levels. So there are 120 levels for two fermions. And in red is plotted the theoretical prediction in this case, which can be calculated. It's actually also Gaussian. And so here, the initial state, which is in red, in blue, and in green, corresponds to these two fermions in these two levels. Yeah. Then what we do is we generate randomly. It's very faint. I'm really sorry. I can barely see. But there are levels here. These are the basically the eigenvalues of the interaction. And in red, we have the theoretical prediction on this the density of states, which is the semicircular law from a random matrix theory. And here in green is represented actually this probability of transfer I mentioned earlier. And it appears that actually we can calculate it numerically and we can also calculate it analytically. And I will explain later how we proceed. This curve is really interesting because if you take the widths, if you take roughly the full width at half maximum and if you divide it by the mean level spacing, you can have an estimate of the number of accessible states from the initial state, okay, which is the Z here. And here, so we, from this initial state, we numerically integrate the Schrödinger equation by exact diagonalization. And here it's plotted by the expectation value of the occupation number in the eighth orbital, which is this one. So as you can see by its field initially, it decays down after there is a short transient, and then it oscillates as a function of time, randomly. Well, what appears to be randomly. Now, if we regenerate the interaction, and we can see that we get a different pattern here. So this pattern is clearly the signature of the microscopic disorder on the interaction. Okay, so you can think of this pattern like a speckle pattern in optics. Actually, it's very similar. And then, if we start increasing now the number of fermions here, we can see the amplitude of the fluctuations are decreasing up to the half filling here, where the dimension of the Hilbert space is maximum. And now if we keep on increasing the number of fermions, we can see the fluctuations coming back because the dimension of the Hilbert space decreases down again because of the particle hole symmetry. Okay, the dimension is just this binomial coefficient. So back here in this paper, we provided an upper bound for the fluctuations, which is scaling like the inverse of the dimension of the Hilbert space. And so actually this upper bound scales like T, so it's not really the best upper bound you can get. But what we empirically observe is that actually this variance of the fluctuation scales like the inverse the number of accessible states. So this phenomenon is not specific to systems of fermions. You can actually observe it for a system coupled to an environment. And here we have a two-level system. So we redo the same simulations ideas. So here on the initial state for the environment is here. And the initial state from the system is the excited state. If we plot the probability for the system to be excited, and we now increase the dimension of the Hilbert space of the environment, we also have the squeezing, the fluctuations. Huh? So before we move on, I think it's good just to look back at the motivations of the first users of random matrices in a physical context, which were Wigner and Dyson. So this was in the 50s and the 60s. They were interested in this nuclear data, which is the neutron capture probability as the function of the incoming energy of a neutron that you shine on a heavy nuclei. And so to try to make sense of this forest of peaks, Wigner was led to make a drastic change of point of view, which is, I think, very well summarized by this quotation from Dyson. So I quote Dyson. We picture a complex nucleus as a black box in which a large number of particles are interacting according to unknown laws. As in orthodox statistical mechanics, we shall consider an ensemble of Hamiltonians, each of which could describe a different nucleus. There is a strong logical expectation, though no rigorous proof, that an ensemble average will correctly describe the behavior of one particular system, which is under observation. So actually, in our model, we have the same point of view as Wigner and Dyson, except that we put the randomness only on the interaction. So we have some control over the non-interacting part of the Hamiltonian. And this phenomenon of concentration of measure justifies rigorously this point of view. So I think it's really an interesting shift of point of view because, so in the standard framework of statistical physics, the randomness is introduced on the state of the system. And now with this idea, now this idea of using random matrices, now the randomness is introduced on the Hamiltonian of the system, so on the nature of the system itself. So as I told you, but if with this typicality property, we can do analytical calculations, so we can just average over the interaction. So the tool we use is the what is called the resolvent, so it's just a green operator, but it's a many-body green operator, and if you do the calculations, you can see easily that these expectation values of observables that are related to the correlations between matrix entries of this resolvent operator, which are just many-body Green functions. To do this calculation, so we developed a tool for Gaussian interactions, which is interesting because I think it works in the non-perturbative regime. So with these tools, we can now calculate this transition probability between the uncoupled states. Okay, and the result is amazingly simple. So this, in the long time limit, so this probability of transfer is actually just a Lorentzian function, which is a reminiscent of the Brett-Wigner law in nuclear physics. And the width of this Lorentzian is given by a generalized non-perturbative Fermi-Gordon rule. And with this, actually, with all this framework, now it's possible to calculate, to enumerate these accessible states and define a new partition function, which is the convolution of the many-body density of states without interactions with these curves. And so I remind you that the microcanonical hypothesis is to say that actually this is a rectangle function. So now, from the unitary quantum evolution, within this model, we have a way to calculate, actually, just from the quantum evolution, this probability of transfer. Now, let me move on to the third part, which is the crossover towards determinization. So here, I'm going to show you some numerical simulations. So we start here.
Sorry, could I interrupt you about that last slide just very quickly before you move on?
Yeah.
What is a non-perturbative Fermi's golden rule? Sorry, could you just...
Fermi golden rule, to my best of my knowledge, it's a perturbative rule. No, the Fermi golden rule is perturbative.
Yeah.
So here, it's just you just extend it. It has the same shape, except that now the DOS is, I should have said, the DOS is it's the many-body density of states with the interactions inside.
Okay, cool, thank you.
But it has the same shape, the same, yeah. So the crossover towards determinization. So here we start from this initial state, so you can think of it like a Fermi C with one fermion plus one fermion in a high energy state. And we start, so the initial state now in the many body spectrum is here. And the interaction now is so weak that basically the initial state is frozen. Okay? The number of accessible states is just one. It is the initial state. So the occupation numbers here in these four orbitals are frozen at their initial value. Now, what's happening if we start increasing the strength of the interaction? Here we can see an oscillation developing here, and you see that for these two orbitals, the oscillation is out of phase as well as here. So to try to understand these patterns, we had a careful look at the single body spectrum, and actually it appears that there is a quasi coincidence between the transition frequencies between the third, the eighth, the nine, and the 12 single body levels. Okay, so this means that very close to the initial state, there is one many-body state, which is nearly resonant, and which is the first one to be coupled to when one is increasing the interaction strength. And so actually, these oscillations are nothing else than Rabi oscillations. And if we keep on increasing the interaction strength, but now we are getting coupled to more neighboring states. Okay, so basically, we are getting another oscillating pattern on top of the first one. So we have getting some beating between several Rabi oscillations involving the accessible states. Okay, and the contrast is decreased up to a point where up to this point, so where we have a quasi-stationary. So I think qualitatively, it makes sense to understand this crossover from the perturbative regime to the thermalization regime as basically a beating between Rabi oscillations. How much time do I have?
Got about. Trying to remember how long is it? About maybe just over 10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. 12, yeah. I'll just skip this part and just focus on the last part, which I think the most important. So the stationary states. So here you see that for this is the initial state for our simulation. And we have these stationary states, which are, so I remind you, this is not obvious because this is a closed quantum system, which is prepared initially in a pure state. It is evolving unitarily according to the Schrödinger equation. So globally, at all times, it is in a pure state. But locally, or let's say at the level of single body orbitals, we get some stationary values here, almost stationary. So but if we take these occupation numbers and if we plot it as a function of the orbital energy, we can see this distribution. And yeah, it looks a lot like Fermi-Dirac distribution. So it's tempting to make a fit, just fit the Fermi-Dirac formula and extract a temperature. But then, what is the meaning of this temperature? There is no bath, there is no environment to thermalize, okay? So it looks like the system is actually acting as its own bath to thermalize. So in order to understand this distribution, what we did is we studied this distribution as a function of the initial state and the initial energy. So what's happening if we start increasing the initial energy? we can shape this distribution and increase the temperature here up to a point where actually the distribution is just completely flat. This is at the point, the initial energy, zero. And we can even get a negative temperature if we keep on increasing the energy. Okay, so you see you've got so positive temperature here and negative temperature here. So to try to understand this, so we actually we redid these simulations with actually several single body spectrums, okay, just to sample the distribution with more points. Okay, and so this is also the same study as a function of the initial energy. And then we look back, we have this formula, and we can actually from this we can calculate this number, this expectation value for the occupation number. It involves this new partition function. You can have a very simple counting argument to decompose this z and rewrite the occupation number as 1 over 1 plus alpha k. And I guess you see where I'd like to go. I'd like to basically see the mismatch with the Fermi Dirac, or see how Fermi Dirac emerges from this. So the first thing is to consider the small interaction limit. In this limit, the probability of transfer here can be approximated by a Dirac function, which is sampling the many body DOS. Okay. So basically, we have just this ratio of doses on this alpha factor. We can do a log, an expansion of the log, and here with this, so here we have a formula for the DOS because it's Gaussian with a certain variance, which is here sigma, and the temperature is connected to the initial energy and the sigma. And interestingly, now there is an extra term, a quadratic term with the orbital energy, which is given by this. So now we can get the Fermi-Dirac limit. We can go beyond Fermi-Dirac, but it's still, interestingly, it's still a microcanonical. And now this is these are the predictions here. So at half filling, at small interactions, we have a Fermi-Dirac-like distribution. We don't, because at half filling, so this term cancels, so there is no second order. Only the Fermi-Dirac behavior. Then but we wanted to probe the regime where this term becomes dominant. So we can cancel this term, the linear term, so the Fermi-Dirac like S-like shape, by setting the initial energy to zero and moving away from half filling. And this is what we do here. So we start at zero energy, and we decrease the number of fermions, and we can see now a new distribution, more U-like shaped, which is here the study as a function of the filling factor, and this is the prediction from the Z. So here we have something going beyond Fermi-Dirac, but it's still a microcanonical. So that's basically all I want to say. So this is my conclusion slide. So we have a random matrix model to study this problem of thermalization for closed quantum systems, for systems of interacting spinless fermions. we can observe this typicality property, and I think you can think of this property as a sort of new kind of ergodicity, because it tells you that time averages or ensemble averages over microstates are not required anymore. You can just average over ensembles of interaction Hamiltonians to get the typical dynamics. So the core calculation tool is this this correlation between many-body Green functions. And so with this, we can get this new distribution, stationary distributions, which involve a new partition function. And yes, and that's the end of my talk. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Questions? Okay. We'll stop.
Do you have a comment on the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis? Do you agree with it?
So my understanding, I have to say my understanding of ETH is not...
But a typical eigenstate would give the same averages.
So my understanding of ETH is that it's... if you take an eigenstate of the coupled Hamiltonian with interactions, if you do a partial trace, so if you look at its local behavior, you should find some. So this hypothesis says you should find something very close to thermal equilibrium. But this is if you consider, this is if you take an eigenstate of the dressed Hamiltonian, so the Hamiltonian with the interactions. Here we don't consider dressed eigenstates. Our initial state is a bare eigenstate, so an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian without interactions, and we are considering it how it's delocalized over these accessible states, which are also bare eigenstates. So there might be a connection, but it's not.
Yeah, you do time evolution, and you're using your random matrix to do time evolution.
Yes.
And can you trace out of that? Can you focus in on one fermion and trace out all the others, and do you get the same temperature, effective temperature? And
we are this expectation value is a trace by itself. We are tracing the occupation number operator over the many-body wave function. And
I'm thinking more, taking a sub-ensemble, you said it's self-averaging. If you're able to look at a single particle and treat the rest of the closed system as a bath.
I think you can only consider you can't decouple one particle from the others. You can only focus on one. The particles are in a highly entangled state at all times. This is the many-body. There is a many-body wave function or many-body density of states, which is evolving unitarily. Following the Schrödinger the Schrödinger equation, and now you can't extract. So with the other model I showed, the system coupled to the environment, then you can do partial traces, and focus on the behavior of the subsystem.
You could do it for the many-particle system. I mean, you could pick out one fermion and trace out the rest. I mean, an experiment.
No, they are indistinguishable. The fermions are indistinguishable.
If I was doing an experiment, I don't know. I have a bunch of electrons in an atom. I could try and pick out do measurements on.
Yeah, with a local. Yeah, okay. With a local probe.
Yes. You have no sense of size here, right?
You just no, no, yeah, no, it's very, there is no concept of space, yeah, it's just on orbitals, single body orbitals. Yeah.
Let's move to the next question. It was the same question. Similar enough.
That poked me into, no, I don't want
to ask. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, well then let's thank Gregoire and all the other morning speakers.